All right, Katie. Really appreciate you taking time to come out and talk to us about the protests that are going on in Georgia. A lot of people know that I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Georgia from 2003 to 2005, and I have been going to Georgia almost every year since. And Ukraine has been keeping much of my time because of the Russian invasion there. But people are on the streets in Georgia right now because of this foreign agent bill. Before I get into that, I usually ask my guests, how are they doing? Because we talk about all this heavy stuff, and you're human beings, and this takes a toll. So I just wanted to check in with you.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you so much for having me here. And thanks for everyone who's listening to this, for the interest on the events going on in Georgia. It is pretty tense in the country with this bill being reintroduced once again. And we are pretty tense in, with the protests, which are ongoing every day, regardless if it's formally announced or not. School students or university students go there every day at the Parliament building to protest the draft law that is in the process of hearings right now.
This bill was introduced in March of last year as well. And so this has been an ongoing thing, particularly that's being initiated by the Georgia Dream ruling party, right?
Yes, absolutely. So last year, in March last year, Georgia woke up to the day when the government came up with this initiative to introduce the draft law on foreign agents, which is, of course, a copy-paste of Russian law. I'm not talking about which version, because originally in 2012, this was the purpose of the Russian law as well. People were pretty pretty angry from the very beginning last year, and you could tell that from the scenes on the street. Each and every citizen that you could see protesting locally in Tbilisi, and not just in Tbilisi, to be honest, they were seeing this draft law as an existential threat to this country and to our European integration. This is something that I would really like to highlight, that Georgia is the country that is, we have European integration in our constitution, as it's our constitutional end goal to have Euro-Atlantic integration fulfilled. European Union has been our friend for a long time. Basically, since we regained the independence, we started cooperation with the European Union through various formats, and we ended up signing association agreement and different other ones. And at some point, we got quite some advance. We were called a leader of the associated trio in this format, because Georgia has been pretty much successful in its reforms at some point. Georgians, as they got this visa-free regime with the European Union, since then, people itself started to realize, get to know to Europe themselves. So at some point, in the beginning, it was the idea. And at some point, people themselves understood this idea better by traveling there, having access to educational services and many different assistance that the European Union invests in Georgia. This is not just education, it's also infrastructure, it is also health services and many other things. And recently we saw this development in the Eastern Partnership countries, that we became louder and louder with the ambition to become European members, European Union members. And with Russia's brutal law war in Ukraine, we saw this window of opportunities to actually apply for membership, which Georgia did along with Ukraine and Moldova. This is when we actually started with this really crucial steps that we should have taken along this way, the democratic reforms that we should have implemented to advance on this path. Right now, Georgia is lagging behind, just one step behind Ukraine and Moldova. But last year we got the European, we got the status, so we are the candidate country. This is really historical event for Georgia, and Georgians have been very vocal of support, public support towards the European membership in the European Union, which accounts more than 80% of countries' overall support to it. So this is basically just to give you an idea why membership to this union is so important for us, and this is how much the penetration of the European Union support has reached to many different levels of Georgian society, starting from farmers to the school students and etc. So this is why we saw this amount of people on the streets last year and this year too. Last year it was existential because this worked contrary to our ambitions to get to get the candidate status that we were really trying to have by the end of last year. And this law, just like this year, last year too, was called as a sabotage of our European integration. So this year, this April, when this draft law was reinitiated, this is basically the exact same law with a slight different name. So they decided to change a name this time. So instead of foreign agents law, this year we have the organization, well, a transparency of foreign influence. So this year they're targeting specifically, I think they realized that calling people agents was not really working for them, and people, citizens of like any age, saw that as attack on them personally. So they changed this name into adopting this terminology to organizations advocating for the interests of foreign power. And they kept this terminology super wide. So basically almost anyone can be, not almost anyone, any entity that is under a country abroad, so non-Georgian, can be considered as a foreign power. And anyone who gets funding from them over 20% needs to register as someone working for this country's interests, which is obviously contrary to what most of the civic society organizations that we are talking about are doing, right? Me myself, I work for Transparency International Georgia, and we are beneficiaries of all these donors that are being attacked right now, along with the civic society organizations. And these organizations now today have to that's what the government wants. They want to prove that we work for Georgian interests, and not just organizations that I just mentioned. Other civic society organizations that are the targets of this draft law are working for the Georgian citizens. This is highlighted by the European Union representatives themselves.
Right. So I get that. So I just wanted to add some important context to all of this. So I was in Georgia in 2003 under the Edward Shevardnadze government, and then there was a Rose Revolution that took place at the end of that year, that began in October, and then the Saakashvili administration came in. There's a lot of conversation to be had about his administration over two terms, but one of the things that happened in a nutshell was that he was very much a Western-leaning Georgian official who put Georgia on the Western, on the minds of the Western world and society. And then in 2012, he was defeated, by the Georgia Dream Party. For a lot of reasons, a lot of people were disenchanted with the Saakashvili regime. He actually, even though he was very Western leading, he had some semi-authoritarian tendencies to himself. And people also called him Patara Putin, as well. I remember that very particularly, which basically little Putin, those were terms that were generally heaved at him at the time. And so Georgia Dream has pretty much gone on its own semi-authoritarian path there. And in fact, when it comes to state capture, and in fact, Transparency International has done extensive work on state capture. And so I don't know if you can actually talk about the state capture component. I know you're not going to deal with the politics, but the state capture part is a very important piece to what's happening.
Yes, absolutely. So in 2022, Transparency International Georgia published this research in which basically we researched how the government is being managed and ruled by back then shadow ruler Bidzina Ivanishvili, which is the oligarch that we have in Georgia. Recently, he just made a third comeback, the public comeback, and he now employs the role of honorary chairman of the ruling party, Georgian Dream. This is really important part of why this law is communicated the way it is communicated right now. But just to summarize the point that I was making, we were showing in this research, you can see how Ivanishvili is connected with each and every key minister and government official, starting from his Kartu bank or other organizations that they previously worked in. So almost all of his ministers are coming from his business circles. And then you can see the influence coming from the top. If I may, I'll jump back to his comeback and why do I think it's important regarding the law, Russian law context. When he made his surprise comeback right before the New Year's Eve, by the end of 2023, he mentioned the inability of opposition, and I. By opposition, he meant the wide opposition, not just the political opposition, to keep the government in check and their ineffectiveness. And this seemed like a signal towards civic society organization, which is a cornerstone right now of Georgian, remainings of Georgian democracy. So this was coming as a signal from his comeback speech. And this came... it didn't come out of nowhere. If we look back in the events of 2023, after the draft law was revoked after the mass protests in Tbilisi last year, then we saw pretty active campaigns, not just very typical Georgian Dream style anti-European campaigns, propaganda campaigns, but also very dangerous attacks on Western donors. And those donors are really respectable Western donors that work on democratic and not just democratic topics in the Georgian society. And they support the civic society organizations that you see in Georgia, which are called Vibrant by our Western partners very pretty often. So those donors have been attacked in a way that you can see that this has become really dangerous.
Attacked in what ways, though? What does that mean?
Sorry?
What do you mean by attacked?
So last year, by summer, if I'm not mistaken, our security service started a case against USAID. This is really well known for they were accusing them of supporting organization that was planning sort of a overthrow of the government. So that was something that was pretty, I would say, pretty dangerous. Then going forward with that, then we saw other attacks on EED. For example, EED was accused of the same thing for their support to some organizations in Georgia. We saw attack on Eastern Partnership Index. So basically, European stakeholders that we see taking part of in the critical work for Georgian democracy, basically each and every index or organization that measures democracy in Georgia that do not work in favor of the government, they're being attacked. And this comes from the history of attacking European members of European Parliament. And this has been ongoing for at least past 2 years, very, very much actively, since they started becoming very critical to Georgian government. And they have been called, they have been accused by the government of being supporters of, or they linked with the UNM. They have been called radicals and etc. So this is the overall landscape of how does this look like. So I just wanted to highlight that with this law, they had prerequisite already, at least the development showed that they started attacking the Western donors very openly. As I mentioned, this was pretty dangerous precedent. And along the way, they have been already trying to discredit the civil society organizations as much as possible. And now this draft law basically targets both civic society organizations, which along with media, of course, and donors, because they are telling the Western donors, the partners that we've been working together so strongly for Georgian democracy, that they are foreign power, and then the civic society organizations working with them are working for their interests, which is absolutely not true.
So I wanted to ask you, how long do you think that these protests will continue? Do you see the second introduction of this foreign, essentially this foreign agents bill that's being pushed again, really pushing Georgians to say maybe we need a change at the top, or I don't, you know, if you can get into that.
Let me tell you what I'm hearing at the protests and what overall mood in the society, at least people among the people who come to the protests are. Last year, when draft law was withdrawn, Georgian Dream said that they would not bring it back. But a year later, they did it. So this is very typical approach from Georgian Dream, and people clearly that we have been lied to so many times, like the Georgian people have been lied to so many times about such crucial things, that people already have huge disappointment, and even the phase of huge disappointment is pretty past that. Many people that I've seen at the protests speaking at the microphone or just standing at the protest, they see this process as a long process. So nobody's expecting the protest to happen twice or three times and then the law will be revoked or etc. They understand that this fight is long, this is really important, and they also understand that the ultimate goal for people is to go and vote this October for change. I'm quoting one of the speakers that is basically one of the Georgian musical band member. He was saying, I think on Wednesday, that we have to make sure that we are at the elections this year and vote for change. That's exactly what he said. And I can see this mood, this narrative is definitely swimming through this people's minds. There are many banners that school kids or university students bring, which clearly demonstrate that they are really tired of having to be at the protests every year, not just once, but season by season. They have to stand by parliament and protest one thing or another. This is not the first time that we have been protesting, or Georgian people have been protesting various things in the country. We have been when the war started in Ukraine, we were demanding our government to be supportive of that. We were gathering help for Ukrainians, and I even remember banners saying sorry for our government, because our government, on the narrative level, I want to highlight this, was not expressing what Georgian people wanted Ukrainians to hear from us.
Right. And I'm curious, how has the Russian invasion of Ukraine impacted Georgia? Because I know that tens of thousands of Russians have gone to Georgia in order to avoid mobilization. And I speak to my friends in Georgia every week about this influx of Russian people, and many of them tell me that they felt this triggering, in a sense, because it just reminds them of the colonial period of the USSR, in which you had people coming who never took the time to learn the Georgian language. People lived there for decades, never took time to appreciate the culture. And so you see a lot of videos of Russians saying glory to Russia as a kind of poke or an attack of glory to Ukraine, right? Or Slava Ukraine, for example, right? So I just want to ask you, how is this invasion of Ukraine impacting the country now?
Thank you so much for this question. I want to remind our listeners that Georgia is currently occupied by Russia. Over 20% of our territory is occupied by Russia. We have Russian troops stationed on the occupied territories, and our citizens are abducted, killed almost every week. You can see the news that Russians just decide to grab Georgian citizens, detain them, and sometimes, unfortunately, they are being killed. And we have the facts of that too. So on this end, you can imagine how tense it is for Georgian citizens living under this occupation for this long, having this Russian troop stationed there and dictating which land to grab which day and not being punished for it. This is ongoing for years, and we have people displaced from these territories living here in this reality. War in Ukraine this is exactly why war in Ukraine was so hard for us also emotionally to process, because we have been through this already, and having those Russians coming over, coming to Georgia, and we saw that obviously this was not approved by Georgians. We can debate on so many things that Georgians, do they approve this or that, but when it comes to Russian, absolute majority of Georgian people just do not like having Russians here. It was in the very beginning, which was really tense. You could see that people would walk around and they would hear people speaking in Russian, and this automatically causes tension, because no one likes Russian speaking, because Russians, they wanted to take our language from us. We even have a day for that. We fought for our language to remain as a state language. So each and every word is very, very symbolic for us. It was really tense just to speak of being in the streets. There was some sort of crisis. There was a price surge. There was rental prices went so up that Georgians had to leave the apartments, and they were left without one. And it was quite problematic for the students who could not afford expensive housing, or at some point it got so expensive that they just couldn't afford anything. And it went for quite long, and even now in 2024 you can see the effect of it on rental prices. It's still very expensive. Many people had a concern, like obviously security concerns, because there's no country in the world who has this amount of Russians coming in the country, and there's no security concern with that. But we didn't really hear it from the government. It was very evident among the people, but unfortunately government didn't really see a problem with that. So overall it had a pretty, and we are just another note on this, we are not we don't know who exactly is let in Georgia and who is not. We only hear that some of the opposition representatives, media representatives, are not let in the country, but there are some reports of people, some close associates of Lavrov, for example, was having a party in Gakheti in Georgia.
Sergei Lavrov, who was a foreign minister.
We had a huge rally on that protest.
And Lavrov, by the way, is the foreign minister of Russia, for people who don't know. Yeah,
so there's cases like that government doesn't necessarily respond to. This is still a huge security concern for Georgia. along with this one, that we have a law which directly attacks civic society and critical media, again, cornerstones of current current state of democracy of Georgia, which are pressing. I just wanted to highlight one more really, really important element of this. Right now, we are in the process, when the government is in the process, at least, of fulfilling 9 steps that the European Commission has tabled for us in order to get a response from the European Union, whether or not they will open accession negotiations. This is one of the steps on the way to European integration, and this is extremely important for Georgia. What does the Georgian need to do for that? We have 9 steps, reforms, judiciary reforms, electoral reforms, and other reforms aligning with the European Union foreign policy, for example. And those reforms are not being fulfilled so far. It's been halfway already. We are there. And we have pretty critical reports. You can also see it on our website. Those reforms are not being fulfilled. And in the moment when this law was reintroduced, there was a really intense campaign on the judge vetting. So one of the part of the reform is to do the vetting on the influential group in the Georgian judiciary. And this was a really huge deal in Georgian political agenda. Civic society organizations were one of the key actors who were demanding to align with the European Commission recommendations and government. What did the government did was basically defending those influential judges, 4 of which are already sanctioned by the U.S.
Yeah, right. There are a couple, some more context to that too, is that when you talk about the Georgian language earlier, it's important to note that in my experience, if you are 30 or younger, people don't particularly even speak Russian well, because they speak in English. In fact, I've run into plenty of instances where my Russian was significantly better than a lot of Georgians that I've met, because they despise it so much in large parts.
So generation, you know,
Now, when I was in Georgia in 2003, it was common for younger people to really embrace Russian, but even then it was declining. But then under the Saakashvili administration, again, I'm not, you know, a billboard for him, but one of the things that he introduced in addition to strengthening support of Peace Corps was Georgia had their own initiative of bringing in people from English-speaking countries to teach English across the nation. And I forgot the name of that program, but he was really stressing English. And pretty much when you go to Georgia, you go into any official building. I went to a post office in a small town in southwest Georgia, Ahausige. I'm not going to ask people to try to pronounce that, but it was near the Peace Corps village where I lived, and I found a woman there in this small town who communicated to me in English.
Wow.
And so I just want to really give some context to what you're saying. And so when I say that hearing the Russian is jarring, it's very visceral for a lot of folks, and I just want people to appreciate that. But I really want to close out by asking you, what do you think is next with these protests? Do you feel like the energy is more intense than it was last year? And what does it say about the strength of civil society coming out and really making their voices heard? And do you think that this will lead to any future shifts, or do you see any potential signs of that?
Thank you again for this question. I see unity in people that Georgian people have seen maybe, but this time I see the unity so clearly, not just among the people itself, but we see that the West is also on the people's side. And this has been seen recently too, but it's very clear that the government is proving that the law is not Russian. The West very clearly saying already from all the platforms that this law is against our European integration, and people are united. Georgian people are extremely united around this idea of European integration. Not just idea, they want it. They support implementation of that. They support government to take actions for us to go closer to European Union membership and NATO membership. As in for the protests are not just that it is very united. I see that the generation, I am not that young at this point. I just realized that millennials are getting old, because last year showed us that the Gen Z is already grown up people in Georgia, and they fully understand what they are dealing with. They know what they can differentiate between disinformation, misinformation, the facts, which government is really trying to mix up with each other. And at these rallies, I see that most of the protesters, especially the ones who need no one's steering on where to stand, when to come to protest, how long to stay, they are very united. They are peaceful. This is really important. I have seen with my own eyes that they would not even let each other do anything unpeaceful, let's say. I remember seeing some guy just stepping up, just jumping on a car, I think on Wednesday, and the kids around me were yelling at him, "What are you doing?" Like, this is just really good example that they want to show to each other and everyone that this protest is really peaceful. They absolutely understand what they are fighting for. First, this law has to be withdrawn, draft law, and it doesn't have to be adopted, shouldn't be adopted. And just another call that the protesters have made and demand is to release all the detainees, because almost up to 40 people have been detained in the 3-day protests from Monday already. And the spirit is really high. I've been tweeting also that the morale at the protest is really high. Everyone, you can see the patriotic spirit at the protest, especially this coming from youth. This is something that you cannot always describe, but you have to experience. Some people were even mentioning that this is so beautiful with the music on. This is so important recently at this protest, that music is leading the spirit of this protest. And all the music that you typically hear there is about Georgia, it's about homeland. And you know why is this key? Because government is trying to call the protesters homelandless people, not just radicals that they typically use for propaganda or UN related, or there are some other arguments that the propaganda narratives that they have. But also, this is very key. They call these young children or young people homelandless protesters. And it is so contrary at the protest if you take even just one look over there. And I think government is saying that the way they are trying to discredit these people in the protest doesn't really work, because these younger people are they are very courageous. They understand what they are fighting for. And they, most importantly, they understand that this is not going to be a short but long-term fight. And ultimately, they understand that we as citizens who believe in democracy and who believe in very active participation, this is one of the demonstrations of active participations that we have been seeing on the streets. They fully understand that the democracy takes place with the involvement of citizens, and one of the ways is to go and vote this fall. This is exactly why having civic society organizations and media still alive and still active in the country is extremely important. This is also important to highlight on this behalf.
I appreciate you, coming in and talking to us about this, because I really wanted to take this week to bring in the voice from the ground in Georgia. Georgia is a country that I love so much, and one I want to definitely going to come back to this year and stay and get a feel for things, because I can tell you, this is a particularly unique situation for people who follow politics in this part of the world. And back in 2012, no one thought that Ukraine, for example, or even Moldova would jump the gun ahead of Georgia in regards to its European trajectory, for example. And so you've seen a complete reverse. And right now, what you see when these protests are indicators of a society that's, you know, of a civil society that definitely is one that's vibrant and one that seems that's on a resurgence, so to speak, and one that's kind of saying that it's time for us to catch up. So
just a key takeaway from what I was trying to say for the listeners who might not have the full context on the country or the region, protests in Tbilisi is super vibrant and active because people do not want to wake up in Russia. They see this law a step closer to Russia and further away from European Union, which is even those are the words coming from Brussels. They know that if laws like that are going to have a place in Georgia, they know that their future will be in Russia, which Georgian absolutely do not want. And this is something that is existential for Georgia. This draft law is existential for Georgia's European future, and Georgian citizens want to join the European Union. So this integration is extremely important for the citizens. And it is even more clear that they have such an opposition to Russia as an occupier, obviously, that they demonstrated every time you come go out of the streets. So this law means Russia. They don't want this law because of that. They want to see their country in the European Union.
Thanks a lot, Katie, for coming on.
Thank you.